to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Child's body out of a lake for myself.
Oh, yeah, but what do you do around here other than watch TV and waste time on the internet? You know what? Looking at that trash is how you get fulfilled. That's fine, but I will not compete with it.
Pornography is a huge problem today, and it's not just limited to men or secular society. Statistics showed that in 2006, 50% of Christian men and 20% of Christian women were addicted to pornography. In 2001, there were reported 74,000 adult pay websites on the internet. Another study had the adult porn industry making profits of over $13 billion. A 2008 survey of young adults by the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy and CosmoGirl.com found that 20% of teens have sent or posted nude or semi-nude pictures or videos of themselves. And 51% of teen girls say pressure from a guy is the reason they send sexy messages or images. Houston, we have a problem. Today, my guest is Vicky Titi, and she's written a book called When Your Husband is Addicted to Pornography. She's here today to talk about her personal story and to give solid biblical advice on a workable plan of action for women who have been scarred by their husband's addiction. Vicky, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you for having me.
Writing this book was a very personal journey for you, wasn't it?
It was.
Could you tell us a little bit about your story?
Sure. You know, when I first got married, I had no idea that there was any problem, but it wasn't very long into the marriage that I first found magazines and was just shocked. There wasn't Sports Illustrated or Men's Health, things that you might expect to find. And when I asked my husband about it, he had an explanation and I believed him. And then, you know, time would pass and I would discover something else. And eventually I found a lot of things on the internet and a filing cabinet filled with things that he had downloaded and printed. And after a while, the excuses didn't really line up. I found that I was most nights going to bed by myself. I was waking up in the wee hours of the morning and was still alone, and he was on the computer. And, you know, the internet history would be erased, and there were just a number of things like that.
Mm. And how did you respond to this? Were you angry? Were you...
Yeah, you know, I wish I could say I was gracious the entire time in my response. I think, like most women, you experience a tsunami of emotions when this happens. You know, you're so devastated and heartbroken, and I felt responsible. You know, I just thought something must be wrong with me, and so I just felt shame. But I also had this rage that I just couldn't understand where it was coming from either. And so, yeah, I mean, bless his heart, in one moment I would be enraged, and in the next moment I would be sobbing. And I've come to realize that that's not all that uncommon mm-hmm. to react that way.
And how did he respond? I mean, did he try to pacify you? Did he say it's not about you? What did he do?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think in my situation, my husband didn't struggle with this. You know, I always tell people that they're lucky if their husband is struggling with this, that he doesn't want to be doing this, that he's saying that there's a problem. So many men just do it, and that, unfortunately, was my situation. So he didn't say, I have a problem, or, you know, you're absolutely right, this is not okay. Instead, he didn't take responsibility, and he would say, you know, you're imagining things, you're losing your mind, you're crazy, this is nothing, I don't know what you're talking about. when I found things that were in filing cabinets, I heard things like, I'm doing research for a book. And you know, it's in hindsight laughable because the only place a book like that could be sold would be at a triple X store. I mean, just completely inappropriate. So, he just had a lot of explanations and he never really owned it. And I think that's why our marriage didn't make it, because mm-hmm. there was no, you know, taking responsibility or desire for reconciliation.
Give us a working definition of pornography addiction, because some people might be confused about what constitutes crossing the line. I mean, some people are looking at girly magazines, and then you've got the folks that are, you know, on the internet and in chat rooms and stuff like that. What constitutes crossing the line here?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's different for different people. And here's the thing, you know, the Bible doesn't talk specifically about addiction, but God is certainly not silent on being a slave to sin. And I think that's, you know, certainly what pornography becomes, is you become enslaved to this issue. And it begins to disrupt your daily life. And, you know, that's a problem. And the problem with pornography is that image, especially for men, doesn't leave their minds. It's trapped there. So they can see an image one time, and it's always going to be there. I don't think it's that different for women, although I understand that men are more visually, you know, stimulated that way. So I think, you know, for some people, it can be a one-time exposure is what sets the ball rolling. And for other people, it may be different than that. But I believe that as soon as it's disrupting your daily life, and not just your activities, but even your thought life, as it's coming back to you all the time, then it's a problem.
Yes, absolutely. So it's taking control over your thought life. It's mm-hmm. not something you think about, you know, maybe once or twice a week, but you're focused on this all day long.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
What were some of the biggest challenges you had to overcome when you discovered your husband was an addict?
You know, I think that my immediate reaction, like I said before, was, and I believe this is typical, is that I immediately felt responsible. I felt like I had to be to blame. This was my fault somehow. I must not be attractive enough. I must not be intimately capable enough or available enough. I mean, it just, you know, why? Why would he have any reason to look at pornography, to look at other digitally enhanced women with whom I couldn't begin to compete? You know, so, you know, I felt this overwhelming need to fix myself somehow, or to make things better. And so, you know, first it was, you know, I need to change my appearance. I need to lose weight. I need to then change our environment. So I was, you know, making the house immaculate and fixing his favorite meals and doing all sorts of things that didn't necessarily have anything to do with the addiction, but just an effort for myself to control the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found myself trying to fix him, you know, trying to control, you know, though he didn't show any desire to be corrected or to change his behavior, then I thought I might be able to change it for him. And you know,
don't we all?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I manipulated the environment, in my mind, it made sense that if there's no computer, then there can't be any pornography, because primarily that was the means with which he was getting it. And so I remember locking the keyboard in the trunk of my car and hiding the keys mm-hmm. and, you know, thinking that would change things. And, you know, not surprisingly, it didn't stop the addiction.
So all your striving and all your trying to control and fixing and self-improvement and everything that you were doing, how'd that work for you? Did he change at all? Did you sense that, you know, okay, now he really wants me a little bit more or anything like that?
Yeah, no. You know, sometimes there would be a period of time where he would seem to be trying harder, but in the long haul, that didn't last very long. And what I discovered is that I became just more frustrated and incredibly angry. I think that really was the, you know, when I saw my anger just really get out of control, and I thought, you know, I was angry at him. I think I was to some degree angry at God.
Sure.
That, you know, why are you doing this? I, you know, what am I supposed to be learning from this? Because this just isn't fair. But
Well, I love what you say in the book about a husband's sin affecting a wife's heart. Mm-hmm. It's not just about the hurt and rejection, but it's about the anger and the bitterness that it can cause in her. So how her own personal sin, you know, how he's kind of leading the way for that, because her own personal sin is resulting from his behavior.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, when I talk too about the fact that when God shines the light in this very dark place and unveils the fact that there even is an issue, that you discover other things in the shadows. You know, when, as soon as you shine a light into a dark place, it casts shadows, and you discover that, you know, I've got some stuff I need to work on too. And the biggest thing that I had to learn was that I don't have control over anybody but myself. And my primary responsibility is to walk in obedience to God's word, and I can't make someone else do that.
Right. Yeah. You give some straight talk to women, you know. I think that's really awesome. You say you haven't been the perfect wife, and that women need to examine themselves to see what they've done maybe to contribute to their husband's addiction. Mm-hmm. Can you give some examples of what you meant by that?
Yeah. Well, you know, let me say first, because I want women who are listening to hear that this is not their fault. Mm-hmm. And I say that many times throughout the book, that nothing they've ever said or done or not said or done is reason enough for him to turn to pornography. That was his choice, and it has nothing to do with her ultimately. And when a husband says that, this isn't about you, he's meaning that, even though it doesn't feel that way. At the same time, you know, we aren't perfect, and whoever said we were supposed to be? I mean, at what point did we get that from God's word, that you had to be a perfect person? Other than Christ, I don't see anybody perfect in the Bible. We mess up all the time. And so, you know, we need to understand that that is the case, and there are some things that we need to be aware of. We need to be careful about, you know, the kinds of media that we bring into our home. Are we setting some boundaries? Are we considering, is this advertisement that came in from, you know, such and such a store that has bras all over the cover, does it need to be laying out here? Or should that go in the garbage and not even make its way into the house when you're coming in from the mailbox? What kinds of television shows are you watching? What kind of books are you reading and do you have laying around the house? Do you use coarse language? Are there times that you're, you know, rejecting your husband when he does want to be intimate, and what are the reasons for that, and is that, you know, a biblical response? And so there's some things that we need to look at within our
own hearts, absolutely.
Exactly.
And then, you know, a critical spirit, a spirit of self-righteousness, all of those things certainly have to play into it, because, you know, when we're wounded, you know, and women feel a whole lot of rejection when their husband isn't engaged in pornography. And so, you know, much of their entire sense of value and worth is affected here. And so they're going to lash out, you know, in any way they can to get him to change, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And so anger and critical and, you know, condemnation, all of that can be part of it in an attempt to change behavior.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so fascinating to me, because the man feels such, in some cases, the man feels such shame,
mm-hmm.
you know, and intimacy is a huge deal here, because one would expect that perhaps he wants to be intimate all the time and the woman is not wanting that. That's not the case. When pornography comes into play, pornography actually causes a man to want porn more. They have this hunger, driving hunger for more porn, and less desire to be with someone who loves them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's very confusing for people to consider. And yet there's, you know, it results in these huge intimacy issues. And so for a man who is struggling with this, he has this tremendous sense of shame because he hasn't kept himself pure for his wife. And so he may be choosing not to be intimate with her because of this shame issue. And she reads that as rejection.
Absolutely.
I'm not okay. I'm not enough. He doesn't want me. Our desire as women, I think, is so to be his one and only. And when you know he's engaging in pornography and he's looking at countless women, then you know you're not the one and only.
Yeah.
And what do you do with that? So you're right. Sometimes we do lash out and we say things we shouldn't say, and we have this sharp tongue, and, you know, I mean, that's a very difficult thing to control. I'm often asked, you know, what should a woman do when she thinks her husband's engaging in pornography, and how should she respond to him? And, you know, the ideal, if we can be ideal, is to approach him in a tender way and to be as kind and open to hearing what is going to be said. But realistically, that's very difficult.
And that's not going to happen all the time. I mean, we are human beings and we have emotions. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes we just have to be real.
Absolutely.
Get it out.
And
get it out to God. Rant, rave, you know, do whatever we need to do.
There's such thing as some righteous anger.
Absolutely.
You know? I mean, that is okay. I mean, God, you know, it's out there. Christ got angry and it was righteous anger. And but how long are you going to carry that?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to deal with that in a healthy way? Because some of those emotions are very unproductive and really don't contribute to healing in the situation.
Right. They're just destroying you. Any thoughts on what drives a person to pornography? It's not just because they're not getting enough sex from their spouse.
No.
It's much deeper than that. Have you done any research on that?
It is much deeper than that. And, you know, and I certainly don't promote myself as a pornography expert by any means. I mean, I'm not a counselor. I have a loving relationship with the wonderful counselor, and I take people there. But I can tell you that I believe it has to do with some deep intimacy issues. And I think family of origin issues, one of the things that I think was fascinating to me and eye-opening is how many of the women who I interviewed for my book, and when I talked to them about their husband's addiction, how many of both the husband and the wife had some issues, you know, with a father or a mother, but it seemed like more often father issues. And I think we carry those things into our future. And
we absolutely do.
We have to deal with those. And, you know, I don't want to over-spiritualize things, but at the same time, I believe that we all have this Jesus-sized hole in our heart that can really only be, you know, it was intended to only fit Christ. And we try to fill it with a lot of other things. And that's not healthy, and it doesn't work. And I think that pornography is one of those things. And we're, you know, when men and women, I mean, let's face it, you know, the new statistics say 30% of women, or 1 out of 6 women, depending on what statistic you're looking at, is struggling with pornography too. And so, you know, we need to be careful that we're filling that Jesus-sized hole with Jesus and not with lots of other things.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's a big thing that people need to realize. This isn't just a male problem anymore. I mean, look at that book, 50 Shades of Grey, that's out there. You know, the women that are snarfing that book up, it's really, really cross genders now.
Oh, yeah. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. And it's certainly a sign of what our mainstream society considers okay.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they, you know, if you look at, I describe 4 levels of sexual addiction in my book, and the first level being, you know, lust and it's self-gratification and pornography and things that mainstream society not only finds acceptable but promotes. If you watch, you know, you don't have to watch very much primetime television to see references to pornography.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's horrifying.
It is. It is. And you know, sometimes if you're not aware of what you're hearing, I mean, they don't always use the P word.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make references. Just last week, there was a new show on, and it was brand new, so we thought, well, let's just check this out. And within the first 15 minutes, they made reference to the man in the marriage saying something, or the woman saying to her husband, well, maybe you'll quit deleting the history on the internet. And my husband and I looked at each other and were like, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's another pornography reference, and we shut it off. I mean, you just...
Yeah, they normalize it, you know. Absolutely normalize it. Do you consider pornography addiction infidelity? And if so, is it grounds for separation or divorce biblically?
You know, I do believe it's infidelity. I think scripture is pretty clear that the marriage bed is a sacred place and it needs to be kept that. And it talks about that in Hebrews. And so when a man is, you know, experiencing and seeking sexual fulfillment outside of the marriage bed, or a woman is, but again, we're talking here about husbands, that is a betrayal. That is adultery. And, you know, people will say, you know, well, he only does it now and then. He only, you know, engages in self-gratification, looking at pornography a few times a week. But how ludicrous would it be to say, well, he only sleeps with other women 2-3 times a week? I mean,
right.
Really?
Yeah, really? Are you kidding?
That. And it's the same thing. You know, I've had so many women, and I've heard this from other professionals, say that many women consider pornography addiction more hurtful and more harmful to her than an actual physical affair, because you cannot ever begin to compete with hundreds of digitally enhanced women. You can't. And, you know, those images crawl into bed with your husband when, you know, when you're going to be intimate with each other. So, absolutely. Is it grounds for separation or divorce? I have to tell you that, you know, though my first marriage ended in divorce because there was no reconciliation, there was no repentance or acceptance of responsibility, I have yet to find someone who says divorce is the thing. You know, it's painful. Under any circumstance, divorce is painful. And my book is not promoting divorce by any means. I know what God has to say about that. And at the same time, there are some circumstances that become irreconcilable and dangerous for a woman to stay in. In fact, as I interviewed women for the book, 25% of the women, their husbands had escalated to, you know, levels 2, 3, and 4 of sexual addiction, which level 4 is violent criminal behavior. And so, you know, that's not a safe environment to be in. And yes, then separation is very likely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I talked about in the book. That's a, you know, near the end of the book, we do an examination of how do you know if this is safe for you to stay here or if you do need to consider a separation or something more.
Could you go through those 4 steps for our listeners, Vicki?
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things that I want you know, women to know is how to confront this, first of all. And so, you know, I take them specifically through the process of confronting and what does that look like and how do we do that in a biblical manner, because Matthew 18 lays out very clearly what confrontation is supposed to look like. So I help them understand what does that look like in the context of pornography and, you know, talking to him and taking someone else with him. But then you get to this point where you need to examine your heart. And I ask them to look at, for example, a scale of 1 to 10 on how forgiving has she been toward her husband. And, you know, I have to say this for listeners, this is at the very end of the book. I think it's important for them to work through all of the other issues, hope and trust and, you know, many, many things. And believe me, forgiveness often comes long before trust is renewed. But so I don't want them to think that they're going to open up the book and in chapter 1, it's going to say, have you forgiven your husband? That's not the case here. But I want them to examine their heart and consider, are they holding a grudge against their husband? Are they bringing up his pornography use whenever they need to validate their own emotions, their anger or their snarkiness or whatever it is? Is forgiveness not even on their radar? And that would be at the low end of the scale. And then I move them up to the high end of the scale to the point of, you know what, I've worked through all of my issues here and as much as I can anyway, and I've completely forgiven my husband and I'm working through those feelings with God. And so considering where is she at on that scale. And then, you know, I ask her to examine her husband's heart and, you know, consider how repentant is he. Is he completely taking ownership of his sin? Has he confessed? Is he repented before God? Is he doing the right things? I hear women talk about the fact that their husband's doing all the right things. He's in counseling, which I strongly encourage. He's in an accountability group. He has internet software filter, you know, software, and he's doing great things. Okay, that would be on the high end of the scale. The low end of the scale would be that, you know, despite you going through all these levels of confrontation and having others confront him too, that he's not accepting responsibility. He's not remorseful. He's not repentant. He's not willing to stop or even suggest that there's a problem. You know, that would be the low end of the scale. And the hope is that you would both be at the high end, you know, and but that's not always the case. If you've forgiven and he's not making any change in behavior, then this might be time for a separation. And at the same time, if he's doing all the right things and you're just hanging on to bitterness and ugliness, and you just won't let him touch you, you won't let him, you know, have anything to do with you, you're just angry, and he hasn't looked at pornography in years. I mean, I've heard this scenario, and at this point, I have to have that tough conversation and say, you know what, his pornography is no longer the sin that's ensnaring, it's your unwillingness to deal with your stuff.
Right. Could you go over the four levels that you outline in the book about pornography addiction to kind of decide whether somebody's addicted?
Absolutely. Level one is, like I said, it's what's acceptable to mainstream society. So you're talking lust, fantasy, masturbation, pornography. It's magazines and internet and videos, things like that. Level two is when live porn becomes part of the picture, when they're going to strip clubs or nude dancing or massage parlors, when they have a physical affair, that sort of behavior. Level three is criminal behavior. So voyeurism, exhibitionism, phone sex, inappropriate touching, and prostitution all falls under that third level. And then the fourth level is also criminal behavior, but it's violent criminal behavior. So sexual assault, rape, and child molestation. And, you know, like I said, and this is not a scientific study, you know, just happened to be that the 25 women that I interviewed, 25% of their husbands had, you know, escalated to levels 2 through 4. And, but all of them started at level 1.
Mm. Vicki, we're out of time for today. Thank you for your willingness to share on this most important subject and agreeing to come back and do another show for us.
My pleasure. I appreciate you having me.
Okay. We'll see you next time. God bless. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.